Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I talked to him the night before he went missing. I saw him that morning. I got my daughter up at school, and I headed out of town because I had to run to the Dollar General and get something before I headed home. As usual, I mean, he was out there walking to his tractor. I honked, he waved, we smiled at each other, and then he continued onto his tractor. The day I found out he was missing, I was heading to go to his house. It was my birthday, and we had planned.
Sixty-year-old Mark Bohannon was last seen at his home in the small farming community of Glassford, Illinois, on April 26, 2017. Mark was waiting for his nephew to come pick him up so they could go run errands and eat lunch together. His daughter drove by that morning and saw him outside. Everything appeared normal. They both waved as she drove past. By the time his nephew arrived, Mark was gone. Mark had dinner plans scheduled with his best friend that evening, but when he was unable to reach Mark, he decided to just bring some takeout over for him. But again, Mark wasn't there. Expecting Mark to return, he left the food on the table and left. After not being able to reach him for a couple days, his daughter stopped by on Friday, only to find the takeout still waiting on the table, but no signs that Mark had been there. Mark has now been missing for almost a year. His case is full of strange twists and turns, but nothing seems to completely add up. What happened to Mark Bohannon on April 26, 2017? Someone out there has to know something. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 121 of The Vanished, Mark Bohannon's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Back in January, I covered the disappearance of Alexis Scott, who went missing from Peoria, Illinois. That's just about 30 minutes away from Glassford. Several local listeners who heard her episode contacted me because they had another local case that wasn't getting much media attention. They connected me with Mark's daughter, Natalie, who has been desperately searching for her father. You can find a handful of vague articles online about Mark's disappearance, but they have just the most basic information. When I spoke to Natalie, I realized that this case has so many strange circumstances. It's one of those where you can go through all of the possibilities, but end up back where you started because it's so baffling. There's one thing about Mark that's crucial to understand. While Mark had been a very active man who loved doing things like mushroom hunting and had been a construction worker for many years, he was injured on a job which left him permanently disabled. This is important to understand because on the day that he disappeared, he literally could not have just walked away. And he didn't drive. Mark's daughter, Natalie, described his physical limitations.
He can barely walk. I mean, it's to the point where he couldn't walk 5 to 10 feet, even with his cane. He would have to stop, lean himself up against something or, you know, ask for help. And he was even using a walker, and that was left of the house. So he couldn't just get up and jog down the road or take off and go where he wanted to.
Due to Mark's disability, he had many people in his life who helped him. He had a huge circle of family and friends that he kept in regular contact with. They would drive him to wherever he needed to go and help him out with everyday things like laundry. Even though he required so much assistance, he was repeatedly turned down for Social Security disability. He managed to continue to work around his physical limitations. Mark was self-employed and ran a backhoe service with the assistance of his nephew.
So he did lots of teardowns, he did driveways, he did culverts, he dug out lakes and ponds. I mean, he created them for people, a man of all jobs. I mean, he buried horses for people who, you know, horses died.
Mark was very close to his daughter and granddaughter. They had plans for the weekend after he disappeared to celebrate Natalie's birthday and also her daughter's birthday.
I mean, we did stuff with my daughter with him all the time. She was his life. The day I found out he was missing, I was heading to pick her up to go to his house. It was my birthday. And we had plans. And we had plans that weekend. That Sunday, I was supposed to pick him up as well to go to her birthday party because her birthday was 4 days after mine. And then the following Tuesday, which is her real birthday, he made plans, as always, that she needed to go to Red Lobster because she really loved it when it was actually him who always loved to go there. She was his life, and he would do nothing to miss anything with her. And that's what got me.
On Wednesday, April 26th, the morning of Mark's disappearance, Natalie saw her dad while she was out running errands.
I was the last person to see him besides his neighbor. He literally lived, a couple miles from me. I talked to him the night before he went missing. I saw him that morning. I got my daughter off at school, and I headed out of town because I had to run to the Dollar General below the hill and get something before I headed home. As usual, he was out there walking to the tractor. I honked, he waved, we smiled at each other, and then he continued onto his tractor. I usually stop in, but since I was going to be there on Friday for us to do stuff, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go. He's got to work. I knew he had a job. He called me 7:30 the night before, and he was laughing, telling me that he was now on his granddaughter's sleep schedule because he was so tired, he was going to bed before her.
Mark had made several plans for the day that he disappeared. The first thing on his schedule was to go out with his nephew.
His current job was a barn behind the fire department there in town. And to get to it, he had to go through another farmer's field. And the ground was too wet. He didn't want to tear up that farmer's field. So he called his nephew, and he was working for him, and called him off and said, hey, we can't work today. The ground's too wet to get back there. And so then they made plans to go run some errands. He was going to make a deposit at the bank in Pekin and then for them to get Chinese. My cousin said, okay. He's like, give me 20 minutes because he just lived right inside of town. He's like, I'll be there. My dad also said that my boots are on and I've already fed the cats outside. I'll be out here waiting. So he was outside waiting. Once he got outside or to somewhere, since it was so hard, he would just wait. Less than 20 minutes later, my cousin got there and my dad was nowhere to be found. He looked everywhere for him, couldn't find him. And so he left and went driving around town trying to find him. And he wasn't answering his cell phone. We do know that that was one of the last conversations he had with my cousin. And then directly after that, he called his neighbor to let him know that, hey, my nephew's coming to pick me up. He's going to take me. We're going to do this stuff today. I don't need a ride from you, because that was my dad's character. If he had asked you for a ride or anything, he would always call you and let you know, hey, I found another ride or anything. That's just the respect he had because he really valued the people that helped him. So that was the last outgoing phone call he made, was to his neighbor, and it all pinged the local tower right there by my dad's house. And then the last time his phone pinged as well was the next day. It was still the same tower, but we've never found his phone or him.
So Mark's nephew was the first person who discovered that he was missing, but he wasn't alarmed enough to contact anyone else yet. There wasn't a sign of a struggle or anything that raised his suspicions that this was more than a simple change of plans. But we do know that in the 20-minute window between when Mark called his nephew and when he arrived to pick him up, that something happened to Mark. Mark's neighbor, the one that he had called that morning after speaking to his nephew, has said that he didn't see anything, but he did hear something.
And my dad's neighbor wasn't home when my dad called him. But he did say that when he did get home before my dad had left, he did hear two car doors shut, but he never saw the car or anything.
Mark also had plans with his best friend later in the evening on the 26th.
His best friend and he have a standing dinner date every Wednesday for as long as I can remember. And they had been texting that morning about where they were going to go to eat. And I think his text stopped shortly around the time that he talked to my cousin. And so when he didn't finally answer, his friend just brought dinner there. And he wasn't there. And so like the friend looked all over the house, everywhere for him, outside, and kept calling and calling and calling his phone, and nothing. So his friend left the food on the table. And when I got there on Friday, that food was in the same place that it was left on Wednesday.
2 days went by before anyone was concerned enough to contact Natalie. This was also the day that Natalie had made plans to spend time with her dad.
I wasn't privileged to this until like 2 days later because nobody wanted to worry me. I mean, I literally found out in a Facebook message. I was driving to pick up my daughter and go to my dad's house. I'd just gotten done with work and I got a Facebook message asking if I'd seen my dad. And I was like, no, did you call a phone? And she's like, we haven't been able to get a hold of him. And I was like, for how long? And she's like, 2 days. I was like, are you serious?
Natalie immediately sprung into action and began searching for her father.
Well, I called my friend who was a local deputy and gave him a heads up. And then I called non-emergency and I got there. And 15, 20 minutes later, they got there. Where he lived was an old property that he used to own that he sold to his friend and his wife. That was on 7 acres with an old barn and 2 outbuildings. And then my dad also owned directly next to it, which was another 5 acres that went straight back, that he had an old dump that he had stopped letting people dump in for years, and it all went back into the woods. I searched all that as soon as I got there, and as soon as the deputies got there, we searched it all again. And it was continually searched for days. Cadaver dogs, everything, nothing found. Nothing at all. And I know they took dogs to other properties as well. For months on end, every day when I dropped my daughter off at school, I would go directly to his property and I would search every day.
When I was talking with Natalie, one of the first questions that came to mind was whether or not Mark's cane was missing too. We know that he needed that to get around.
Well, that's an issue. My dad was an antique collector and he had a bucket. Well, now I have a bucket of canes, but the one that he used a lot, that is in a lot of his pictures, was not in there. It kind of had like the flexible bottom where it's almost like a triangle bottom. So it would flex and move with him the way, you know, his body would move. He couldn't even bend his left leg barely. So everything, and I've got pictures of that as well, where he's walking with my daughter pulling him, where he has to lean his body to the right and swing his whole left leg out and around. That's how he had to walk. So, I mean, he sticks out. I mean, he's over 6'3", was over 230 pounds. I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, and so you see this big guy with a cane swinging his leg out. I mean, you're not going to miss him.
The police department began questioning everyone who knew Mark and asking them to take polygraphs in an attempt to piece together what may have happened and eliminate potential suspects. So far, everyone has been cooperative except for one person.
They have nothing strong, nothing, anything to go on. I mean, they've questioned everybody and brought everybody in for questioning, as well as the polygraph. There were quite a few people, and it took a lot of people time to do the polygraph because some people ended up having to go out of the area for work and things. The neighbor and my dad were very close. I mean, he helped me search nonstop and, you know, checked in saying how much he missed my dad. He was a person that, like, if my dad fell, I mean, in the middle of the night, or it could be 2-3 o'clock in the morning, my dad could call him or text him and he would come right over and help my dad. If my dad fell down, he couldn't get back up at all. So for me to continually find out that he's refused or made up every excuse to not do a polygraph, and then he started making claims that I was harassing him. He got me fired from my job, which you can't because I'm self-employed. And so he even told the police that. And I haven't talked to him since October. I mean, I don't even see this person. So then he told the detectives that he would call them the next week to set up the polygraph test. That was 3 months ago. He hasn't returned a single call of theirs and has avoided them since. I mean, I don't understand it. If you don't have anything to do with it. I never assumed he did because he was so helpful. And I still don't think he did. I'm just like, why won't you do the polygraph? I mean, my own family members have done the polygraph, other close friends of my dad, people that helped my dad. And it's not that anybody is trying to blame them. Nobody's trying to say that you did it by doing the polygraph. They're trying to get the timeline and the pieces all together. And they've been able to do a lot of that. After this happens, you see everybody have with a, like, you know, like a shady side or something. Cause it just, it's a big slap in the face. Like your eyes really open up and you see people in a different light. You're back in your head. You're always going to think anything can be possible. If this can happen, you know, in a small town where everybody knows him and knows everybody. But I mean, to be honest, I haven't thought anybody close to him could do this to him because he did so much for everybody else. That's just what I don't get. And that's what we're hoping this might bring to light or something. And that's why I'm continually trying to raise reward money, because it's crazy that nobody in this town has talked in almost a year.
Something that was found in Mark's power lift chair after he went missing has led to some suspicions regarding Mark's neighbor and a debt.
My dad kept a receipt book, like every job he did. And he kept it in like a metal case that, you know, would stay dry or whatever. And he kept it in his tractor. He always had it on him. So like if he needed an update or like he went and gave somebody a bid, he'd give them, because they had so many copies or duplicates to each one, he would give them a copy of that. And he would keep the original and everything in his box and never tear it off. We've never, I mean, the detectives asked me for nonstop for months if I had found it or if I took it or if I had it. We have never been able to find that. His neighbor, the house next door, and there was like nothing. And then there's like fields and there's like my dad's house and then the neighbor's house and then another house that had been for sale forever. And it happened to catch on fire. And the neighbor that, you know, was my dad's friend, he ended up buying that and hired my dad to tear it all down and then fill in the basement. He made comments to people that, you know, since my dad was missing, whatever, that it was paid for, or he paid my dad or this, that. Well, funny thing is my dad doesn't tear things out of that book ever. Even if it's paid in full, he leaves that as records and reference. Well, I found months ago, and I still have it, just that receipt, the original, for the neighbor's job. And it wasn't paid in full. And he still owes $3,200. And that the last time my dad updated it was a week before he went missing. He deducted like $200-some off of it because his neighbor took him to run the ATM down there and make a deposit and to a Tractor Supply store to get grease or oil for his backhoe. And he would pay for the grease. And my dad wrote down on there the date, what he bought for my dad, and my dad deducted it from that amount and then put the new total. So that guy still owes my dad $3,200. But for me to only find that part out of that whole book, that was just so random. And where they found it, it was really, really weird. My dad had a power lift chair because he couldn't get up and down. A friend of his had given it to him when her brother had passed away. And her other brother, once my dad was gone, asked for it back so he could use it because he's had issues. And he literally called my office and then called me. And he's like, I found this in your dad's chair. And we'd searched that chair. But so I don't know if it was like way down inside or whatever. I mean, it's my dad's writing. It's his. And why would it be tucked in that chair? It's so weird. And he's still denying it, saying, nope, I paid him. I'm like, well, this says April 18th that you took him to TSC and got grease, which they both confirmed because they both told me about it. I talked to him that day. Why would you lie about that?
When someone goes missing in a small town, the rumor mill usually goes crazy. This has happened in Mark's case, and many have speculated that he may have been targeted because he had a lot of money. But Natalie told me that this just simply isn't true.
My dad lived check to check. He didn't get Social Security. He didn't get Medicaid or anything. I mean, he actually just got denied for all of it again, saying he wasn't disabled. So he didn't have any money. I mean, because that was a big thing going around, too, that supposedly he was getting paid for a big job he'd been working for years. And he was going to get all this money. And I was like, nobody in their right mind would believe that because they know him. And even if he didn't have money, he would find a way to get money for somebody if they needed it or to help somebody else. Unless it was just something that someone did because someone told them this, you know, then they were really upset that he didn't have it. And that's why I kept putting out, you know, pleas. I'm like, we're not anybody to judge. We just want to know where he's at. It's worse not knowing than knowing.
Most of us lock our doors at night these days, but sometimes you'll hear stories of people who live in relatively safe communities who still leave their doors unlocked. Well, Mark must have felt safe living in his small farming community because his home didn't even have locks. But after he went missing, Natalie had locks put on the doors to secure his home. A couple weeks later, something very strange happened.
Well, the house he lived in never had locks. And so, like, the day after it all happened, I asked his best friend who owned it to put locks on it, and he went right down and did that. But before that time, it was 2 days that I didn't know, and anybody could have been coming and going. I mean, it was a mess from his cats being left in there. Clearly, the food left on the table didn't smell too great. The lady who did his laundry and stuff for him, she was the one that contacted me, letting me know they had been missing. She had been down there on that Wednesday to take his laundry down. She'd been looking for him and stuff, and she's, you know, let me know that nothing had been moved. But the key of it is, it was 2 weeks later, and the same neighbor made a comment or let us know, and that his mother, who was driving by, she worked late at a gas station in the next town, and it was like 10 or 11 o'clock, and she was driving by. She saw someone in my dad's living room. Like, we'd left the screens and shades up like he had, but everything was locked, even the windows. I made sure. And that they saw a woman in the living room. He told us this the next day, and I was like, why didn't you call that night? And he's like, my mom didn't tell me till this morning. And I was like, okay. I mean, and she even said, she said, I knew it was a woman. I could tell from her stature order from behind. She had like longish, long brown hair. I mean, it was crazy.
Natalie was alarmed to hear that someone had been inside the house. Who would have a reason to break in? They decided to go over to Mark's house and check it out.
There was clothes baskets that were on a chair that were moved across the room and dumped on his bed and on the floor. There was a chair that was, I mean, it was across the room, and it was moved clear across the other side of the room in front of a dresser where somebody had gotten up and opened up the ceiling above it. The ceiling tile was still popped open. There was a light left on in a spare bedroom that he kept a lot of the antiques in. That light was left on. There was a window that was opened in the living room. And another one that was cracked or opened behind his headboard. I don't know why that was open, or maybe they just got it open, realizing they couldn't get in through there because his bed was right up against it. And I let the officers know that we all were leaving, and since my dad's best friend, who owned it, wasn't feeling well, his wife was going home to make him go to the hospital. And the reason the report was never filed is because the deputies ended up going there because my dad's best friend ended up having a massive heart attack and dying. They were like brothers. I mean, they were more like brothers than my dad and his own siblings. I mean, they grew up doing everything they shouldn't do. I mean, they were so funny. It's just so crazy. And he was starting to tell me things too, and mention people stopped and asking, you know, how my dad was or this or that. And I just feel horrible because here their family is going through this now too.
With Mark's best friend tragically passing away so close to his disappearance, anything that Mark may have confided in him is now gone too. Now that we know that someone was looking in the ceiling of Mark's home, what could have possibly been in the drop ceiling that someone would have been interested in? Mark wasn't able to put anything up there himself.
I don't know how he would ever get anything up there because he, Lord knows, he could not get up there. Everybody that I would ask for, like, no, the only person I could ever think of to ask would be his best friend, who's no longer here. And when we had to move all this stuff out, people that were helping me, I even asked them, and they got up there, they looked too, and they're like, I mean, we couldn't find anything up there. But I mean, I've heard all sorts of stories. I've heard people tell me that somebody gave my dad's best friend a ransom that caused him to have the heart attack and all this other stuff. I was like, well, if he did that, he would have let me know.
Knowing that Mark's home hadn't had any locks when he went missing, and that someone had broken in after the locks were installed, I wondered if they'd been able to identify any missing items.
I mean, he didn't have anything to take. And after speaking with my cousin, who is his nephew that was working for him, there was only like a couple things that were missing. We had known about a watch he bought. I mean, my dad, he's still superintendent for the whole state of Illinois for the Optimist Club. He was a junior chaplain for the Masons for, I don't even know how many years, just stepping down recently, just a regular member because he couldn't, you know, do everything anymore. He had a Mason's watch that he had bought that was $500, and he didn't even have that 2 months, and that was taken, stolen from his house. And this was like literally months before he went missing. And then we've never been able to find my grandfather's wedding ring. That was the only thing my dad inherited from them. I mean, it wasn't something that he wore. Might wear it to a funeral or something like that. My dad wasn't a man of jewelry. I mean, he didn't wear stuff like that. And I have his jewelry boxes and I have everything. There's nothing. And there's Mason's rings in them, but that's it.
The other question about this break-in is how the person was able to gain entry to Mark's home. Since a window was found open, is that how they got in?
That's something I can think of. I don't know. I mean, I've gone back since. The slider door was broken. The locks never worked on it. And so my dad would always just put a pole in the, or like a big board on the bottom of it. And when I went down there a second time, somebody had been in again, just assumingly because that door was on it, kind of like an angle, like somebody popped it, you know, where that board was holding it, but so somebody could get in because the curtains were blowing out. So I thought, well, maybe she had gotten in that way and just opened the window. But I mean, I've had other friends of my dad's who have helped search nonstop who were there that the first 2 days, and they repeatedly said, we checked all those windows. Every time we were there, we made sure everything was locked. I was like, can anything else weird go on that makes no sense?
While Natalie was telling me all this information about the break-in and the drop ceiling, the question of what someone could have been looking for was nagging at me. What could have been up there if Mark couldn't get to it himself? Is it possible that someone was stashing something at Mark's home and maybe he didn't even know about it?
Anybody could have went to the bathroom and he's sitting in the living room and he's not going to get up and, you know, go that way. And they could have just went there and then walked right across that room into his bedroom or anything. I've thought about this. And so have some of his other close friends. Heroin is very, very rampant out there. From what I found out, people are selling it right in front of people out there and nobody's done anything about it. I almost wondered if, I mean, there was no locks there. The basement doors are wide open, but you do have to go. I mean, the basement door was right. You walked in and then you went into the kitchen door to my dad. But anybody could have went down there and left stuff down there or anywhere on the property. Those outbuildings, my dad didn't go in them a whole lot. He had stuff stored out there. And his best friend who owned the property, they stored their things there too and brought cars down when he was working on them and storing them. But they weren't out there like in all that daily. And I really wondered about that myself. It would make perfect sense because, I mean, he's right on the outskirts of town. I mean, what's it going to hurt anybody else? Because if you didn't know, it's not going to hurt him. And I have thought something very similar, like he found out about it and he wasn't happy about it. And before he could do something about it, they did something about it.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In 2 non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. We often hear about many possible sightings in missing persons cases. With Mark's case, he lived in a small town and people knew him. He also stood out because of the way that he walked due to his injury. There haven't been many sightings of Mark, but there have been some.
There's been a few. I know, like, the day of it, everybody was saying that they saw him in, like, a red hood van going down the hill to leave town. And that was debunked. I mean, that was actually his nephew, and it was a white man. And it was the night before he went missing. He took him down to Dollar General to get stuff to make mushrooms because somebody had given him some mushrooms. And that was another thing. Those were still in the fridge. Those were the biggest drug to my dad ever, fresh mushrooms. So, I mean, he would never leave those in the fridge to go bad because he hadn't drank in, what, over 15 years or done anything, maybe even longer than that, closer to 20. That was debunked. They've said a maroon or a burgundy, I don't know if it's a two-door or a four-door car with temp tags. I found out the lady who did his laundry and stuff, she had drove down in a car similar to that, and they gave all that information to the detectives, and they checked it out, and that cleared. But still, my dad's best friend, wife, and then who owned the property, she made a comment that she had been watching the news because her daughter was on the news. She did an interview, and she said she got done watching that, and then she had to leave town. And so she knew, like, the exact time of, like, when she left town, and she saw the similar red car there at my dad's at, like, this exact time. And so they've still been looking for that, but they've found nothing. Nothing was, like, surveillance from, like, coming and going from town, from people's houses or businesses, nothing.
Looking into the information that they've been able to gather from Mark's phone hasn't been very helpful either. They were able to see exactly who he had spoken to and also gather the ping data. The pings have all gone back to the same cell tower that's closest to his house. The detectives handling his case have spent time going through all of his calls and speaking to those people.
The only thing they thought was strange was that a man of my father's age talked and spent so much time on his phone. They made me laugh about this. They're like, he spent so much time on his phone, like, worse than a teenager. He knows everybody. They're like, the amount of numbers that they have gone through, they said it's ridiculous, but they're like, every number we contacted, they knew your dad, or they were his friend, or this job, or that. And I said, well, what do you expect when you're shut in your house? You know, you're going to call and talk to people and your friends. So they said everybody they've called and checked up for every number that was dumped from that phone as a follow through. So,
one important thing to note is that Mark didn't have a smartphone. He had the older style flip phone. He wasn't on social media and didn't even have an email account. So all of these avenues that are typically looked at don't apply to his case. When someone goes missing, those left behind searching for answers go over everything that happened in the months and days before they went missing. Did the person say anything that could have been a clue? Natalie remembered something that had recently happened that could have left some people unhappy with Mark.
Months before, I think it was like a month or two before, this happened with my dad. Someone he'd known from town and everybody grown up with for years had passed away. And he'd found out people had been taking advantage of her and writing checks from her account as soon as her Social Security or anything was deposited. And so he made it known to people that he was upset and that somebody needs to do something about what's going on in the area. Small towns, I mean, yeah, there's, like, probably pot, some drugs, whatever, but you don't realize how bad things are until something like this happens.
Natalie hasn't just been looking at things that happened around the time of Mark's disappearance. She's also gone back to something that happened long ago. Back in the 80s, Mark had gotten involved with drugs. Around this same time, there was a large-scale federal crackdown on cocaine trafficking in central Illinois. This was called Operation Iron Eagle. Mark got wrapped up in this and ended up becoming an informant. After this happened, he completely turned his life around. But Natalie wonders if his involvement in putting so many dangerous people away could have come back to haunt him.
Everybody has a past. And the reason my dad has been so adamant about like people not doing drugs, I mean, he was arrested for drugs back in the early 80s, I think. I mean, that's how long it's been. But back then, a lot of people don't know about when he was involved in that. The FBI forced him to basically be an informant. They forced him to testify in a major, major case in Springfield. They still reference this case nationwide. They netted over 90 people and went back to the cartel. But my dad was arrested with all of them. But they forced him to testify in Springfield, and the local detective didn't believe me. I literally went down there and got the documents. My dad kept the paperwork that was signed, the original documents that were signed, forcing him to become an informant and testify. The assistant state attorney at the time, was name was on there. And so I called him. And my dad even had copies of the cash checks, like the per diem they paid him each day, like the $12. And so I gave that all to the detectives, and they're like, no way. He's like, where'd you find this? I'm like, I opened up a shelf, and it was right there on the top. But they claim that still has nothing to do with anything. Because, I mean, it was like over 20 years ago. But, I mean, there were a lot of people put away. A lot of people put away. And after that, my dad paid for security to live with him because he was so scared. He always made the comment that had he known that my daughter and I would be in his life, because I wasn't when I was younger, him and my mom divorced, he said he would have never testified. And that's what I jumped to from the gun. And they told me no. Like somebody got out, because a lot of people went away for 20 plus years. Last month, I kept asking the detectives, and they said they had no more leads. The lieutenant who oversees the detectives, that's who I'm in contact most, he's like, I finally got, you know, your dad's case, because like, I had to call. And they couldn't even get it called in, and I called the local FBI. And it literally took them over a month to get somebody to go to Springfield and go in a basement and get this case filed, because it wasn't on microfiche, it wasn't on the computers, it wasn't anywhere. It was like put away. And so they wouldn't give me a copy of it. And it took him months to read it because he thought it was 125 pages and ended up being like 500.
How realistic is it that someone would have come after Mark for something that happened decades ago? Well, just a couple years before Mark disappeared, he voiced his concerns about it to his nephew.
It wasn't even like 2 years ago. He showed an article to my cousin and told him to remember this. It was like around Labor Day 1 year. And he said, why? And he said, read it. And it was a gentleman that was going to be released in the next year or two from a prison in Jefferson City, Missouri, that was put away from Operation Iron Eagle here in Peoria, Illinois. And he's like, remember this. And we keep the life of us. We cannot find this guy's name or anything, and the detectives won't give us their name. But I don't know if it's a wild goose chase, since it's so long ago, that could have anything to do with it. His sisters have told me that, well, he's probably in witness protection. And I was like, that's a voluntary program. My dad wouldn't leave, because if he did, it would leave my daughter and I wide open for whatever was coming for him.
Mark even kept in contact with a couple people from back then to keep an eye on things.
One of the key players that went away, he's in prison. He's there for life now. But the thing of it is, if he changed in prison or whatnot, he and my dad are actually friends. He would call my dad from prison or have his son call my dad and give him heads ups about things, or if he thought something was off or anything, which detectives are like, what? And then they saw that my dad had talked to this person. Well, and here's the other thing too, going back to the woman at my dad's house. There was a woman that was forced to testify with my dad. She was a stripper at the time. My dad's best friend and another person. And I've wondered from this day if that woman in my dad's house was her, because she's been in hiding. And she would still call my dad, but it was always from different numbers.
Detectives spoke to this woman to see if she had any information that could assist in their investigation.
They got to at one point, like just a little bit over the phone, but they didn't get anything. But they said, yeah, she's scared. But of what, they don't know, because they're like, she was involved in so much stuff herself.
Even though Mark's past is concerning to Natalie, they've been unable to connect the dots to anyone specifically. One of Mark's friends contacted Natalie with his concerns about someone local. This person knew Mark and had been looking for money around the time of his disappearance.
One of my dad's other good friends that has a business in town, he let us know that a a guy that he had fired years ago that my dad actually had employed to do some stickers on his backhoe for his business and helped him. He'd pay him to grease his tractor and stuff for him since my dad couldn't. Had called my dad's friend that week that my dad went missing, begging him for money to get his power turned back on at his house. And that guy is a known drug dealer. He has assault charges for kidnapping, manslaughter, attempted manslaughter. I think it was a couple weeks later, that guy's house burnt down. All this weird stuff. That guy that was needing the money to turn his power on is also a known drug dealer in the area. It wouldn't take anything for if there was a rumor going around that my dad had money. Even if somebody just pulled in to my dad's driveway because they saw him out there, you'd think that they said, you know, hey, I'll give you a ride, or hey, come give me a bid for this job. I'll have you back before, you know, your nephew gets here. Even if they did that, my dad still would have called and said, hey, so-and-so just picked me up. I'll be back in time, or I'll have them drop me off at your house or anything. But there was nothing.
With all of these different possibilities, but no strong evidence pointing in one direction or another, this has been incredibly frustrating for those searching for Mark. As you've heard many families mention, Natalie has been contacted by numerous psychics and mediums claiming to know what happened to Mark. Sometimes these leads sound crazy, and other times they sound so close that maybe there could be something to it. When you're desperate for answers, it can be difficult to ignore.
And I've had calls upon calls from mediums and psychics, and one that told me that it was my dad's past. And it was like some guy that was still in prison that was going to be getting out soon and needed him taken earlier. So he had an alibi, and that was like this kid's grandson or associated as his grandson that took him, and that he's 2 hours north of his home, and like he's in a cabin or like a fishing cabin. There's a lake a mile away. There's a small truck there. I mean, all these details. And said, if all they need is that case file and all they need to do is pull up and see who that guy is in prison and see who is the only person that's been visiting him. And there they go. Detectives don't want to go by any of that or anything. And then I've heard lately, I've had three or four call me, and I don't know who these people are. They basically said it sounded like that drug dealer that he thought my dad had money. And then he took my dad. And when he didn't have any money, it was like an act of rage. Like he didn't mean to, but it was an act of rage because he didn't know what to do. And that he beat my dad pretty much to death and left him to die. But like a good Samaritan or somebody found my dad or saw my dad and took him to like a hospital or somewhere. And that my dad doesn't have his memory anymore. And that he just doesn't know who he is. And like they told me to look in hospitals in Utah, Missouri. I'm like, how would he get out of state?
The idea that Mark could be in a hospital somewhere as a John Doe has worried Natalie. She's called around to multiple hospitals with mixed results.
The hospitals don't have to give any of that information out. There is no law about that. I even call around them all. The amount of hospitals that tell me that they can't give me information due to HIPAA, I'm like, do you have any John Doe's? Do you have anybody that matches this description? And like the local ones are horrible. Like I've called Galesburg and other ones, the closer ones, and the local ones are horrible. But if I call ones like in Chicago, I've called ones in Utah, like that lady said, and everywhere else, those are the ones that are more than willing to give me information and said they've let their teams know that if they do have this or come across this, to contact me.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. The Peoria County Sheriff's Office has been working Mark's case, and they've worked closely with Natalie trying to do everything they can to locate Mark. But their resources are limited.
It's him and the two detectives for our entire county. And it's a huge county, and they've had so much weird stuff going on in all these cases. I don't know how they're doing it because they're understaffed. And it's election year, so, you know, nobody wants to hire anybody until they know they're back in. And the current sheriff left and went to another city. So there's an interim sheriff. And if you'd think they would hire more, because these guys are doing so much to cover such a huge area, and there's literally three of them.
Natalie has been trying to raise reward money with the hope that offering a reward will get someone to come forward. She's attempted to get Crime Stoppers to offer a reward with no luck. This has been frustrating for her because they've offered rewards for several other local missing persons cases.
Crime Stoppers, they won't give me reward money because for towards my dad or for anybody anonymously giving tips until there's a body. But, you know, that kind of defeats the purpose. I got taken by two private investigators. The first one was a complete joke. Try and raise our own money, reward money, because maybe that'll get somebody out there to talk.
So what happened to Mark Bohannon on April 26, 2017? We know that there's a small time frame of about 20 minutes after the time he spoke to his nephew and when his nephew arrived to find that he was gone. In that 20-minute time frame, he also spoke to a neighbor on the phone. The neighbor has claimed that he was in town when he received the call from Mark, but he also stated that after he arrived back home, he heard two car doors shut from the direction of Mark's home. This neighbor has refused to take a polygraph, which has raised some suspicions, but at the same time, we do have the right to refuse a polygraph. Then there's a debt that he had owed to Mark for the work that he had done on his other property. It's been hard for Natalie to imagine that this neighbor could have done anything to harm her father, because they were friends, and the neighbor was known to help Mark. If Mark fell in the middle of the night and couldn't get back up, this neighbor would come over and help. Is that someone who would have done something to harm him? One theory is that the neighbor may have seen something, but was intimidated into silence. I interviewed Natalie several weeks ago. She recently contacted me with some news. Mark's neighbor passed away in a single car accident on April 6, 2018. He had been driving alone just about a mile away from his house when his car left the roadway and hit a tree with the driver's side door area of his car. He was ejected and pronounced dead at the scene. Anything that neighbor may have known has now died with him. This has been a sad and frustrating pattern with Mark's case since his best friend also passed away. Anything that he may have been able to offer to the investigation is now gone too. So much tragedy in this small community in the years since Mark disappeared. There's also that man in town who had done work for Mark and was going around asking for money the week that Mark went missing. He has a violent history, but there's nothing to really connect him to the case. Then you have Mark's participation in Operation Iron Eagle back in the 1980s. Could his disappearance be related to that? One of the biggest mysteries of this case is who was breaking into Mark's house after he disappeared and why. The neighbor's mom is adamant that it was a woman. What could have been in the ceiling that someone was looking for? Natalie told me about some of her dad's distinguishing characteristics. He's 6'3" tall and about 230 pounds. He has brown eyes and he's bald with a long gray ZZ Top style beard. He has extensive scarring on the right side of his torso from being shot with buckshot when he was 16. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Mark Bohannon, please call Crime Stoppers at 309-673-9000 or Detective Widows at 309-634-5664. If you'd like to follow Mark's case on social media, there's a Facebook group named Missing Mark Bohannon. I'll include a link to the Facebook group in the show notes and also a link to Natalie's fundraiser for a reward. That brings us to the end of episode 121. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Your 5-star reviews help others find the show. Another way to help is to fill out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Georgia. Thanks for listening.
And it just goes so many different ways, and you're like, and we tried to follow them all, and it's just like nothing. Everything leads to nowhere.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.